You're listening to the Pete and Sebastian Show on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
This is the Pete and Sebastian Show with Pete Corielli and Sebastian Maniscalco.
Petey Biscuit, it's Jimmy from Boston. Petey, first, congratulations on your special. It was hilarious. Well done, kid. Well done. But you gotta be fucking kidding me with Jackie's doctor. You gotta put your foot down and stop that shit dead in its tracks. Because you know as well as I do, if Jackie looked like she got hit with a sock full of nickels, there would be no goddamn way this jerk-off swinging dick doctor would have suggested to do the naked exam personally, in-house, and on the spot. You may have to go pay this pervert a visit, kid. Shit, give me a fucking call and I'll go with you. Later.
Hello again. Hello.
Pete and Sebastian Show, we're finally back. We're sorry for the delay, folks. This is an interesting one, bro. This is early. This is a time we've never done it before. We haven't spoken in a while. It's a weird feeling, man. How are you?
I almost feel like I'm talking to a complete stranger.
Dude, that's how I feel. We haven't done this in so long that I started to avoid doing it because I don't even know you.
Yeah, I have to reiterate, we are sorry that the show did not come on time this week. It's just sometimes the stars don't line up, but this is a Sunday morning. I sound like I got a frog in my throat. You sound like you just spun out of bed.
Yeah, I did. And we had a problem trying to get this together. There was, at one point, there was a time, and I thought it was p.m., and you thought it was a.m., so we had that mix-up, but yeah. I got to be a little honest with you and with the listeners, and maybe I owe them an apology, but I didn't have motivation to get this show in on time, and I gotta tell you why. For whatever it's worth, I don't know if it was being nice or if it's the truth, but there was a time when J.J. Watt said it is part of his routine to listen to the cast Friday before Sunday's show. He's got the Jets today. I was trying to break up the routine. I like the man, but I got to do what I got to do for my Jets. I mean, if I put him in a position where he had to watch a lesser podcast show Friday and it throws him off, maybe it makes him make one less tackle, then I did my part.
Wow, so you're throwing a wrench in our operation to save the Jets.
Obviously not really.
2 sacks, 8 tackles, 5 quarterback knockdowns. Yeah, that worked. What a helper.
We got to start with the obvious, the special.
Yeah, I'm real happy with it, and I'm so freaking grateful for all the comments. You, bro, it was funny because, like, you know, you told me you were going to watch it. And then there's this thing where it's like, all right, guy, it's been like fucking 5 hours. Throw me a text. At one point, Jackie goes, even if he didn't like it, he has to throw a text to pretend he did. I mean, that's just fucking protocol.
Well, I watched it at night, so I didn't want to text right when I watched it. I don't know what was going on. So I texted the next day, but... yeah, man. So this thing's going to be playing on a loop on Showtime. So that's just like a running commercial for you.
Yeah, no. And that's what, like, and you had mentioned how that's so great and better than some of these other channels because it's constantly airing. So you're constantly getting feedback. Now, speaking of feedback, I wanted to ask you a question because this is a world I'm not used to. And it's a world I know you're in quite well now. I'm in the airport the other day. And I get a tweet from the actor Matthew Modine. Do you remember Matthew Modine?
I know the name. I couldn't tell you what he's in.
Yeah. If you Googled him, you'd know him by face and stuff. Everything from Pacific Heights years ago with Michael Keaton. Vision Quest. Remember that when we were kids?
All right, Loudon, you win. I never had a wrestler starve on me. Don't be the first.
He's been around. Tons of shit. It says, great job. It was brilliant. And he's got the little, what do you call them, the memes with the hand claps. And then he says something like...
It's a meme, by the way. Meme.
Oh, it's a meme.
Yeah. All right. Lou, that's another one for the books.
Oh, shit.
Okay, I got him up. I know him.
Okay, yeah. So, and we need laughter at a time like this. He says something like, it was very nice what he said. So, now, I'm like, dude, this fucking Matthew Modine, man. This is very cool to me. So I tweet back something like, wow, thanks, Matt. I called him Matt. I didn't even go with Matthew.
Wow.
I'm rolling. That's how I'm rolling now, bro. I see De Niro, I'm going to be like, Bobby, what are we doing? But we'll start with Modine. So anyway, I say, wow, thanks a lot. And then he tweets back again something like a reference off of one of the jokes about bread. And so then I go, needless to say, been a fan of yours for a long time. Bro, I could barely name the three movies now when you ask me. But is that what you do? I mean, like, that's what you do, right?
Hey, exactly. You act. He's acting, you act.
Well, he can't be acting. He started it. He had no reason to start it. But now, if anyone says they're
a fan, I'm saying he's acting like he's an actor. So you got to act back. You know what I'm saying? Oh,
yes, yes. I mean, it could be anybody... who I don't like you and you're famous. If you like me, guess what? I'm liking you.
Absolutely. You go right back at them. You love your work. I've been watching you since I've been 10.
Just having this conversation is making me nervous. Right? I've been watching you since I was 10. I at one point he said, what the world needs is laughter right now. And then I said, what the world needs is Pacific Heights Part 2.
Oh, right. Man. How long did this thread go on? Are you still talking to him?
By the third thread, I was literally adding later, later. Like, let him know I'm trying to shut it down. But
I get it. You both got Showtime specials under your belt now, and Petey's rubbing elbows via Twitter with Matthew Modine, better known as the dude from 1985's Vision Quest. Well, Biscuit has this role in some B-movie, playing a leather-wearing wannabe street tough. You're all highfalutin and can't put the show out on time? I can't wait to hear what bullshit spin you two Cinderellas put on this one. Let's hear it, you divas. Order.
My question is, do you think in Hollywood, can you tell an actor that had a small part in a great movie? I mean, like, let's say the actor had, like, one scene in a movie. He's been in lots of movies where he had more bigger parts. But in one particular movie, he only has, like, one scene. Can you still tell him that that movie was a great movie? Or would he be like... What, you mean the one where I said good morning and bought a newspaper? That one?
Well, if the scene was something like... Okay, I'll give you an example. I don't know the actor's name, but remember in Godfather, the... he didn't have a small part. Yeah, it was a small part. The guy that woke up with the horse's head in his bed.
Oh, yeah, the guy who played the movie producer.
Yeah, the producer.
Yeah.
Relatively small part, I would think, no?
Absolutely.
So if you went up to that guy and go, loved you in Godfather... He'd have to say, oh, yeah, thanks.
Yeah,
even though it was a small part.
I agree. But let's say you go up to Kevin Bacon, who has that huge body of work, and you open up with, dude, I loved A Few Good Men. That was such a good movie. I'm not even saying I loved you in it. I'm saying I loved that movie. He was like the 9th, 10th lead. He had nothing. He had no lines. Do you think he'd be like, dude, what are you even talking about? I did Footloose, and you're coming up to me with A Few Good Men?
Well... You said Few Good Men, and automatically in my head, I pictured Bacon with that tight cut and that Marine hat he had on. So I think he had a bigger role than Cruise in that movie.
You're right. He did have a decent sized movie role. I can't believe you remember that one. I thought I was going to territory you wouldn't know.
One of my favorite movies.
They said when they filmed that movie, they said everybody knew it was going to be so good that the first day... of just table read, Tom Cruise is always very prepared, they say. So they come in to do the table read, and Jack Nicholson, they said, was so into it, he was already off book. And he's just looking over at Tom Cruise, and he's doing his lines without reading. And they said Tom Cruise was so prepared, he was off book. So he's looking back at Jack at the table read. Wow. And they, did you order the code? You're damn right I ordered the code. And that's the table read.
Man. Now, if you're at that table read, and it's your turn to read, and you have to go back to your script, aren't you going home that night and going, man, I got to get this down?
Absolutely. I mean, what the hell, man?
These guys are covered in blazing.
So, hey, listen, and then I'll turn it back over to you, but I got one Hollywood story, speaking of actors and stuff. This is too funny to me. I was reading an excerpt. There's a new book out by Burt Reynolds about his life.
Mm.
And he tells this great story. I'm paraphrasing it, but I read this excerpt. Oh, God. He's at a restaurant back in the 70s when he was really peaking as a movie star. He's at a restaurant in Beverly Hills, and Frank Sinatra's there. It's Frank Sinatra's favorite restaurant, and he's with all of his buds, Sinatra's. So after dinner, Sinatra invites Burt Reynolds to play cards with his friends. So Burt Reynolds says, I go in the back kitchen, and they literally got a card table set up in the middle of the kitchen, right there. Sinatra and a couple of his friends, and Burt Reynolds sits down. And he goes, now, we're all hanging out, getting ready to play cards, and one of the waiters, Fernando, a younger guy, comes in, and he spills a champagne flute glass. And the owner of the restaurant starts yelling at Fernando. And then Sinatra says to the owner, whoa, 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 quiets him down. And he says, how much does that flute glass cost you? And the guy's like, $1.25 per flute glass. So Sinatra's got his two cronies. He calls them over with briefcases of cash. And then he says to the restaurant owner, he goes, get me all the champagne flute glasses you got in this whole restaurant. So they bring them all out. They put them on a table. And then Sinatra looks at Fernando and goes, now I want you to break every one of these glasses on the ground. Break them all. All right? So this Fernando kid's breaking all the glasses. Sinatra turns, gives all the cash to pay for the glasses to the owner of the restaurant and says, if I come back in here any other time and Fernando is not working here, I will never come back into this restaurant again. Don't worry about your little $1.25 glasses, right? So Burt Reynolds gets up to go leave, and Sinatra looks over and goes, where are you going? We didn't even play cards yet. And Burt Reynolds goes, I'm going home. I got my Sinatra story.
Oh, is that great? That is great.
Oh, man, I got my Sinatra story.
Talk about job security, man.
Oh, you ain't kidding, man.
Sinatra says you're going to be an employee. You're in for life, man. God. That's better than a government job.
That's better than a pension. That's better than, what do they call it when you get tenure?
That's tenure, man.
That's right.
Oh, God.
How did Sinatra live a life like that, just to constantly top himself with these amazing moments?
I don't know. I just don't know how he comes up with the flute glass thing and bring them all out. And could you think of that stuff? I don't know. If you had that type of money, does your brain just go there?
That's a good question. I mean, maybe you're just always thinking that way. And even if you were thinking that way, if I was next to you getting ready to play cards, doesn't he have a friend? Like, I'd be going, guy, don't make him break all the glasses, bro. Let's just play. Can we just play cards? Can we just play cards? Why do you always got to do some crazy fucking thing?
I think if somebody said that, they'd literally be asked to leave.
Oh, you're probably right. You're out of the posse, man. Joey Bishop said that once. We didn't let him hang for 6 months.
Oh, wow. What a good story. So is this book out? Can we get this?
Yeah, but you don't need to get it, because then the next story was about Lonnie Anderson spent so much money on my credit card. Oh, God. You got any more Sinatra stories?
Yeah, I know. Just make the whole damn book a Sinatra story. Isn't there a book out there like that? Where just every chapter is someone talking about a Sinatra story?
I know there's tons of books about Sinatra, but that's the one you want, what you're saying. I don't want to read a book written about Sinatra. I want to hear the stories from everybody else they had with him. Those are the ones. Yeah.
This is a good story for you. When Frank Sinatra was 82 years old on his 82nd birthday, we were all over at his house, and he had been very ill. And for months, there were times we didn't realize whether he was with us or not. And at this particular, we were having dinner. It was Gregory Peck and his wife, and it was Sidney Poitier and his wife. It was Kirk Douglas and his wife, Anne, and Jack Lemmon and Felicia. It was Angie Dickinson, Robert Wagner, Jill St. John, all of in this family. And Frank was sitting off to the side, and he was being spoon-fed by the woman who took care of him named Vine. And to watch this great Frank Sinatra, who would electrify audiences, 40,000 people just by his mere presence, to watch that energy dissipate to this point where he's being spoon-fed. And again, we didn't know if he was quite with us, so we were making small talk, waiting for the cake. And somebody said, gee, where's the best place to live? And Gregory Peck said, I have a villa in France, and I love it there. And Robert Wagner and Jill St. John said, oh, we have a home in Aspen, and we like it there. And Frank, with his head down off to the side, and no one thought he was even, listen, he said, the best place to live is where your friends are. And everybody went like that, whoa, you know. And so my point of that is that here's a man in our industry, arguably the greatest career show business has ever known. Academy Awards, Grammys, Emmys. In the end, it wasn't about any of those things. Mm-hmm. It was about friendships. It was about relationships. So that's the last lesson he taught me before he died.
What's up? Well, we got to go back here. I'm looking at the calendar, and I was in New York. We didn't even talk about Alzheimer's, any of that. Let me take you back to New York City, and one of the highlights of my career, I gotta tell you this, the Mazzilli brothers, who we all know and love, hooked it up at the Madison Square Garden for a Rangers game. They know the guys that do Madison Square Garden marketing and promoting and whatnot. So we had an experience over there. I was with Lana and my mother. I take you into the side entrance, and you have like a private like buffet that you go to. It's like on the club level, and then you go to your seats. I really didn't even know where the seats were going to be. Second row. Behind the bench, man.
Wow. That's really cool, man.
I mean, this is, you could see the ice coming off the skates, the puck hitting the glass, and this is nice. And the whole reason that we were doing this was because we were going to promote my shows in May at the Beacon Theater up on the Jumbotron. So they were going to play a clip of my comedy for 26 seconds. And then go to me. You know how they do those who's in the crowd type of things?
Yes.
So now I'm looking around me. The guy in front of me is, God, what's his name? Dan. He used to play for the New York Giants. Big guy. God, I forget his name. I'll get the name. His name's Dan, though. He was in front of me. I look to my left. Michael J. Fox is there. And across from him is Noah Sodergaard, the Mets pitcher.
Yes, Thor.
No, yeah, Thor.
I want to go on record. I want to go on record too, saying, in my opinion, Michael J. Fox is the singular greatest sitcom actor there ever was. Oh. And now I have to follow that up with, was he shaking a lot? Is it noticeable? Like,
I didn't notice. I glanced over there, and it was almost like, listen, because during like intermission, we would go into the owner's suite, and there'd be like a bar and food, and everybody started to kind of congregate and talk. So I was talking with the football guy Dan and Thor. And another group of guys that were there, and then like kind of Jay Fox was off on the side talking to his crew. It was one of those things where I wanted to go up to him and just shake his hand and say, hey man, I've been a fan since Family Ties. I mean, Family Ties was, I'm sorry, one of my favorite shows growing up. Did you ever watch that on a consistent basis?
I never missed it. I love, and it's so funny because the film that you did with Will Ferrell, where you had the scene where you're playing the comedian. Yeah. And they changed their home into a casino. There was one of my favorite episodes.
Oh my God! Oh my God! Go ahead.
Alex's parents go away in Family Ties, and it's like some college weekend. All these people come to town, so he's turned their house into an inn.
Did you ever see that episode?
I was just going to say, that is my favorite episode. Do you remember what they called the house?
No.
They answered the phone, Keaton Manor. Oh, I love that episode, dude, man.
They had postcards. Do you remember that? He was selling postcards in the living room. Oh my God,
that was a great episode.
And of course, you got all the ones with Tom Hanks. Remember that one with, because he played the uncle who was an alcoholic?
That's right.
And Alex looked up to him. And then there's one episode where it's late at night and they have no booze in the whole house because Tom Hanks is visiting and he would drink it all. It's the holiday episode. And Tom Hanks is literally drinking the liquid out of the jar of maraschino cherries.
Oh, wow.
Because it has a little alcohol in it, and Michael Keaton's yelling at him, "What are you doing, Uncle Da Da Da?" And I'm like, whoa, what am I watching here? Drama? What are we doing? Can we get back to the funny? But that was heavy.
That's what I liked about the show. It had a bit of sensitivity to it. I was crying on some of these family ties.
Oh, I love that show, dude. And then you had Mallory I had a crush on, and her boyfriend, Nick.
Oh, Nick. You gotta love Nick. Played by Scott Valentine.
Oh, you know the name.
Oh, yeah. I used to look at Nick and go, I want to be this guy in some weird way.
Oh, who didn't want? I wanted a dangling earring. He had the dangling earring. He had the 5 o'clock shadow before Michael, the Wham guy, even had it. Whatever it is. So all right. So you're in Madison Square Garden, a guest of the Garden. They're going to play your comedy clip. You have access to this fantastic backstage club area with Thor, the pitcher from the Mets, Michael J. Fox. So did you talk to Michael J. Fox?
I wanted to. I wanted to go. It was one of those things where I went in the bathroom. And I don't know if you've ever planned out a way to maybe introduce yourself when you're alone. And you almost kind of go through the steps. I could go up there and I could say, hey, nice to meet you, big fan of you. Yeah, I'm trying to play it all out in my head. So then I came out and he was gone. But I think I would have done it if he was still there. Anyway, long story short, I didn't get to say hello to Michael J. Fox. But fast forward, the clip goes up on the thing. The camera pans to me and Lana, and I took a video of it. It's up on my Facebook, and I got to tell you, man, one of the highlights of my career, nothing better than seeing your big mug up on the Madison Square Garden Jumbotron and having 18,000 people kind of tuned into your jokes. It was great. And then after that, we end up with your buddy, your old buddy, because he was the one that was hanging around with Noah, Matt Frost. He's with CAA.
Yeah, yeah.
And so is Noah. So I guess Noah's coming to New York. So Matt was kind of assigned to kind of take him around. We end up with Thor, Frosty, myself, my mom, and Lana over at Milo's having fish and eggplant chips. I look to my left and my mom's talking to Thor, and I go, this is unbelievable.
Nice. That's nice. That's not unbelievable.
Oh, come on. I just watched the guy pitch in the World Series, and my mom's going, so you have a girlfriend?
So cool, man.
So, yeah, it was great. And we're sitting there, and I had planned to go to Milo's, which is becoming my favorite restaurant in New York, afterwards with my mother and Lana. And then I was talking to Matt. I go, why don't you stop by? You know, we'll be there. If you guys want to go out, we'll be there. So I invited him. So I took the lead on ordering food. So when they got there, I go, you guys, you got to get the zucchini chips with the tzatziki sauce. That's a must you got to get. And then we ordered, like, the Greek salad. I go, you got to get that, too. And then I had a taste for lobster. I go, you guys like lobster? I get 3 pounds of lobster out here. So we're doing it up. It's like a feast.
Yeah.
And then Matt picks up the bill. I go, what are you doing? He goes, nah, man, it's my pleasure. And, you know, of course this was going to be on CAA, but I took the lead. When you take the lead on ordering, You pick up the bill, man. I'm sorry. I don't know what he was doing, but he snuck the bill. He outsnuck me on the bill. I didn't even think that I was even going to have to worry about anybody paying. But he paid. I felt so bad, man. Terrible. Oh,
why would you feel bad? I was with CAA for a short period of time. You ever see the building in there? The hallways are lined with gold, dude. I mean... I'm in the lobby once. The guy from Entourage, Jeremy Piven.
Yeah.
He comes in. They make him wait. He's waiting right where I'm waiting. who do you got back there that this guy's waiting? And this was during Entourage. They got money coming out of the wazoo. You can't. It would be one thing if Matt was paying himself, but, you know, that's... By the way, you want to hear it? Did I ever tell you the story about Matt Frost with the robes?
No.
With the, you want to hear a wild story, man?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Matt Frost, he's got... Basically, he's got a... It's a side business. He's just the owner and founder of it, but, you know, he's an agent. He doesn't even deal with the other business. But... He's got, I don't know if you've ever seen him in stores or anything, they're robes, a man's robe, but it's your favorite team, your football team, baseball, you know, he's got a Yankee robe with the pinstripes, and I got Derek Jeter's number on the back of the robe. And he's saying, years ago, this is about, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago, he's like, he's in his apartment in Manhattan, and he's watching TV, and it's MTV Cribs.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, and I notice all the athletes are either wearing jerseys or robes. So I'm thinking, what if I made a robe that's your favorite team? It's like a jersey. So he goes, Matt's not a clothing designer or anything. He's just a regular dude. He's an agent. So he writes up a little hand sketch of how a robe would go. And his sample was a New York Yankee robe. And his favorite play was Don Mattingly. So that was his sample robe. And he wrote it with Don Mattingly's number. And he goes, then I send away to this company, and they make me a model of my robe. So now I have this robe. And he goes, Joe Torre was still managing the Yankees at the time. And Matt Frost is very good friends with Joe Torre's son, who's a grown man. And they go to games together sometimes. So Joe Torre's son calls Matt one day, just a regular ho-hum mid-season game, and says to Matt, you want to go to the Yankee game? Mm. Frosty says, yeah, but listen, and Frosty's telling me this story. He goes, when you go to a game with Joe Torre's son, you go through the players' tunnel. You come out through the players' tunnel. You don't go in the same way everybody else does.
Yeah.
And he goes, there's a lot of people could see you when you come out of the players' tunnel. So I asked Joe Torre's son, I said to him over the phone, listen, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I made this robe and I got a sample made, and would you mind if I wear it to the game, you know, when we come out of the tunnel? And he goes, Joe Torre's son doesn't even know what he's talking about. He's like, I'm playing a robe? Yeah, I don't give a shit what you wear. So Matt Frost wears the robe over his regular outfit. He gets there and then he puts the robe over his regular outfit, and he goes, I come through the tunnel. He goes, dude, it was like I was Derek Jeter or something. Everybody's looking at the robe. Holy shit, where'd you get that robe? Oh, yeah, you know.
Wow.
He goes, I sit down in my seat. He goes, maybe three innings later, very attractive woman taps me on the shoulder. And she goes, do you mind me asking where you got that robe made? And he goes, well, I designed it and made it myself. And she goes, oh, because I'm Don Mattingly's wife, and I know he's going to love that robe. Would you like to meet him after the show? I want him to see that robe. And he goes, yeah, sure. He meets Don Mattingly after the show. They hit it off. He goes into the robe business with Don Mattingly and Cal Ripken, and what? They got this company, and they sell those robes. And they've branched out to make basketball ones. You can get a LeBron James robe. So, yeah, so he can pick up the goddamn lobster tail.
Do you know the name of the company?
Sportrobe.com.
Sportrobe.com, man. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, next time you talk to him, be like, I want a Chicago Bears robe.
Oh, I'm here right now. They got a whole thing. They got from NASCAR to NBA. They got it all.
Don't worry about the lobster tail.
What the hell? I should have got 9 pounds. This guy's loaded. And they're going for about $169 a rope.
Yeah, no, they're nice
Good
ropes.
Good for man. Matt, man. This is a nice thing. You know, I found out that Matt is a huge Elvis Presley fan, right?
Yes.
And he was talking to Lana. Lana's from Memphis. And he asked Lana if she had any connections to get upstairs at, where is it? Where does Presley live? His old house. What's it called? Graceland.
Yeah.
I guess when you go to Graceland, you can't get up on the second floor. They said Elvis was a very private man in regards to his home, and no one went upstairs, so they're honoring that. But Matt's dying to get up and see Presley's bedroom. So he asked Lana. Now, Lana says at the table, which I didn't even know, Lana's half-brother has obviously another half of the family. And apparently, and I'll get this straight if it's not right, but my brother-in-law's grandfather was Presley's dentist.
Oh my goodness, dude.
We got to talk about this week.
Did you even know who you were sitting with? You got one guy who's got a robe empire. You got your own wife's got connections to Elvis, and you're just sucking down the lobster tail, getting ready to pull out your own wallet.
I know.
Jeez.
I had no idea. So my wife's brother's grandfather on his other on his other family's side was Presley's dentist. I got to find out. How many cavities do you think Presley had?
Oh, dude, I know he loved that peanut butter and banana sandwich. So that's he was probably cranking out. He was probably loaded. Almost every tooth had a little something going on.
Do you think Presley went to the dentist, or do you think the dentist came to him?
Oh, come on. Are you serious? Yeah, no, he parks. He gets up front, he parks, and he reads a magazine. He reads a magazine in the waiting room. You out of your mind?
I mean, listen, I heard he's getting a haircut at the house, but can you imagine getting a cavity filled in your living room?
I think his dentist lived at the house. That would be amazing. Can you imagine that? Just looking at your dentist going, next commercial, we'll do that cavity. All right? Now, I want to know, this connection you got here, does this dentist of Elvis's in the family, did he keep anything? A tooth? Wouldn't Elvis's tooth?
That's a great
tooth,
question. Great question.
I mean, how much would an Elvis tooth would be worth something?
I don't know. Do you think that's up on eBay somewhere? I don't know. We got to find this out. I gotta talk to my brother-in-law here. Maybe he knows some stuff. I'll do it right now.
If you see now, I wouldn't do this with Elvis. Maybe not Sinatra. For me, it's more of a Dean Martin. But if you had Sinatra's tooth, one of his teeth, you think you'd wear it like a necklace? Put it on a little. What would you do with it?
I had Sinatra's tooth, it would go in a glass cube, and it would be put on a mantle over the fireplace.
What a conversation piece.
Oh, God.
Right away, I think it was a tooth from some, fossil they dug out of Egypt. I'd be half born. And then you go, no, it's Sinatra's right molar. I could get the fuck out of here. Now I'd be hovering over the goddamn thing.
Oh, God. That's great.
What a connection, man. So, yeah. I don't know. Can the dentist get you up and get Frosty up into the back room? I think you should send over some robes.
You get a couple robes, you're getting upstairs. I gotta talk to my brother-in-law to see if we have access to Graceland.
Yeah, well, hey, look, the way it's going, you may be able to pull enough strings on your own in a year or two. For now on, and Lou, I know you're listening every week, it seems, Sebastian's got another amazing story. His life is taking a turn. Can we get some theme music for that now? Like when the fairy comes down and the Wizard of Oz, the good witch comes down? Let's start that with everything. Oh, man.
Oh, God.
All well earned, man. All well earned. What a great story. Now, do you ask Noah to sign anything, or is that so taboo?
Nah, we got a photo together, and that was it. There was no signing. I mean, if I had a baseball handy, I might have asked him, hey, you mind signing the ball? That would have went in a cube.
Yeah.
But other than that, no, I didn't ask for an autograph. I've never really been an autograph guy. It's more of like a photo. If I could get a photo with somebody, I think that's like the autograph of today. I mean, when I was in the 80s, I remember going to see Karl-Heinz Grenitzka and Pato Marhedic of the Chicago Sting. I don't know if you're a big soccer guy, but they used to be part of the MLS, and they were like the toast of the town in Chicago. They were signing autographs at a local sporting goods place, and I went there, and I got their autograph, and man, I thought that was the best thing ever. But now it's like if you get a photo, that's the new autograph.
Yeah, you know, when we're kids, too, like with autographs, I went to a local thing, a basketball exhibition game in summertime on Long Island where I lived, and Mitch Kupchak is from Long Island. He played for the Lakers.
Yeah.
And he was supposed to be there, and he canceled. And he was the only reason I was going. I didn't know any of these other guys. It was a Long Island, like, all-star game. So I hand-wrote Mitch Kupchak. I was like 10. I wrote him a letter. I grew up on Long Island. I was looking forward to seeing you so much and da-da. He sends me back a basketball signed by all of the Lakers. And you know what I do with it?
Wow.
I play with it.
Oh, come on, man.
I was 10, bro. Nobody was collecting that shit when we were 10, right? I mean, that's why there's no Ty Cobb baseball cards out there. Nobody saved that shit. That didn't start till the 70s.
Oh, you're playing with autographed ball? That's something that shouldn't have even been touched by human hands.
I know. In the backyard on my dirt court, just pounding the ball over Magic Johnson's signature.
Oh, God. Yeah. That thing could have been worth some money now.
Oh, yeah, dude. I got into that Antiques Roadshow. I'm late to the game, but whenever that show's on TV, I'm so addicted. Have you watched that ever?
No, you were telling me this last time.
Oh,
I haven't gotten involved with this show yet.
Well, I'll tell you right now, you better find out if there's an Elvis tooth floating around, because that would big money.
So I'm at my mother-in-law's here, and I got to give props to this lady. I've never seen a woman that does this, or anybody. They come to my show last night in Tampa. My father-in-law, my mother-in-law, and 15 of my family members on Lana's side come down in a shuttle. They rented a shuttle bus to see the show. I pull up in a rent-a-car. My family pulls up in almost like a tour bus. So we met them. Me and Lana and I were already there. So they come in the shuttle, and we drove back with them to Naples after the show. It's a 2.5-hour drive. So Lana and I take our bags. We go to our room. My mother-in-law, on the my side of the bed I sleep on, is a book, and it's Jerry Seinfeld's Sign Language. So what she did was, anytime I come here, whatever's kind of going on in my life, whatever my interest is at that particular time, there's like reading material based on what's going on in my life. She then gives me brochures that she came across remember that one time on the show we were talking about medical masks?
Yes.
And having advertisement on the mask?
Yes, yes.
She found a company that does it. So there's like reading material on Lana's side of the bed and my side of the bed based on kind of our interests. And talk about having house guests over. What a nice touch. I mean, come on. If you go over and stay at your mother-in-law's house and she's got like the Burt Reynolds book there just because she heard you talk about it on the cast, it's amazing.
No, that's nice. To put it by the foot of the bed, that's nice. And I got to tell you, I read Sign Language by Seinfeld, and I can't think of a better book to have as I'm trying to fall asleep. I'll be completely honest with you.
Oh, God.
So, no, yeah. That is cool.
I was just blown away. And it's just another thing to kind of put in your hat for those people listening to the show. If you have a house guest, especially during the Thanksgiving and Christmas holidays, and they're going to be staying with you, get some reading material or get something that you could place bedside for the people to read. I tell you, it goes a long way, man.
Yeah, well, I'm really still a fan of when they put a local newspaper, and when you're visiting someone, they put the local paper in your room.
Oh, that's nice, too.
That is nice.
I don't know anybody that gets a paper anymore, but it'd be nice to have a code that you could type into your iPad, and you could get the Wall Street Journal, the local paper, maybe even a Time magazine.
Everybody gets the paper where I live still, man. We get the little...
Yeah, because where you live, they're dying.
The local paper did another thing, a spread on me when my show was coming out. And it's so funny when I get interviewed by the guy. Jackie goes, you got to watch what you say. Remember, whatever you say, he's going to just write whatever you say.
Yeah.
So he's asking me, he's talking about the special, and then he goes... Well, he says something nice like, I really want to ask you about having a wife and how hard it must be on her when you're gone and stuff. And I literally go like this to him. I go, oh, well, you know, absolutely, man. It takes a strong woman to be a wife of a comedian. We're always on the road. And at the end of the day, I mean, I love my wife and I want to get home and hang with her, you know. But blah, blah, blah. You got to come. He takes that little half quip right there. And like, that's the big line. It's like, what's it like being on the road? And then it says, Pete says, I love my wife. And I really want to be home more than anything. Like something like that. I'm like, guy, that was a throwaway. That was the throwaway. And you're making it seem like, I mean, the last thing someone wants to read is a comedian who's like, especially when you're on TV, oh, you're whining because you miss your wifey in your hotel room. That's not what I'm saying.
Oh, God. So, I mean, you must be like a big celebrity in Fredonia there. I mean, you go get a cup of coffee. Are you paying for anything anymore?
Yeah, well, things are so cheap where I live. It's almost like, how can you not pay for it at this point? Yeah. Dude, I got in a cab yesterday. I'm playing here in Edmonton, and I get in a cab, and it's beeping while we're driving, like a seatbelt. You know how annoying that is?
Oh, yeah.
So I go to the guy, I'm in the back, I go, is that me? And he goes, nah, that's me, that's my seatbelt, don't worry about it. And he goes, yeah, it's me, don't worry about it. And then I'm like, it's annoying, man, would you mind putting it on? And he goes, wow, it's really uncomfortable, it's tight. It's just that it's tight. I go, yeah, but that's really annoying, man. So then he gets kind of all huffy, and he leans forward, and he does a thing where he clips it behind him, but he's like a little annoyed with me. Am I out of line because I don't want to listen to a beep every 5 seconds?
No, I totally agree with you there. Somebody gets in my car, and they don't put it on. As soon as I hear ding, I go, put the damn thing on. Before we even go any further, put it on. I'm sorry. You have to put that seatbelt on. I want to know, and this is a question out to our listeners, and if you do have the answer, please tweet at us or go to our Facebook page. Is there a way to disable that thing?
Is there a way, man? We got the Subaru, and that thing doesn't stop. I want to disable it so bad, man. I can't take it, dude.
I know, because I'm not a big seatbelt guy. I mean, I don't know. Growing up, my parents never wore a seatbelt. Never. And then one day... my father all of a sudden changed where he puts the seatbelt on before he even starts the car now.
Oh, that's an age thing. When you get older and you do that, you put your gloves on before you start the car, you click in.
Speaking of gloves, you got snow up there in Fredonia?
Not yet. We're still clear.
Okay, because I'm going to Chicago next week, and they got a foot of snow. Not looking forward to this at all, man. At all. Is there snow up in Edmonton?
They had a tiny dusting, but no. I've avoided it so far. Come on, man. It's the holidays now. Bring on the snow. God. Let's go.
Speaking of Edmonton, did you bring merchandise up there? And if so, has it been selling out the door?
Yeah, man, I got bouncy t-shirts. I sold them by Friday, first show. I was so annoyed.
And they were all gone?
Yeah, I have CDs and they're selling like crazy. It's awesome. But the t-shirts went like that and Jackie's like, God, don't you wish you got more made? And I go, no, I know how this works. If I got more t-shirts made, then nobody buy them. I'd be sitting on all these t-shirts. T-shirts aren't worth it anyway, man. They're so heavy
to
carry around. But whatever. But yeah, no, selling merch, that's going good. One lady, dude, she comes up to me after the show yesterday, right, about my age. She's with a boyfriend or something, and she goes, first of all, I'm going to buy a CD, but before I do, I just want to ask you a question. I mean, it was a really great show, and I really liked it.
I hear something. Something's coming here.
And she goes, and you seem like a really nice, normal American, and I just don't think it's fair that we have to learn about America in our Canadian school system when we grow up, but you guys don't know anything about Canada. I mean, do you know anything about us? How come you don't have to know anything about us? That's what she said to me.
What?
How come I don't have to know anything about Canada being American? I said to her, first of all, I said, well, you know, maybe you should not learn as much about us. Who's making you learn about us? That's my way of saying you're learning about us because we're the fucking kings.
Yeah. That should be in every curriculum.
Come on. Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, throwing this to you, bro. It's been a while since we did a Google that shit. Do you know anything about Canada? Do you feel like you know enough about Canada?
I mean, what are we supposed to know?
That's what I'm trying to figure out. I mean, should I be Googling something? You got the waterfalls. It gets cold. Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal, Quebec. Bing, there. Boom. Done.
I mean, do you even know who's running the country?
I didn't know until I got here. Apparently, it's some guy named Trudeau. And I'll be honest with you. If you're in my country and you don't know who my president is, I'd be very insulted. And I never know who's running Canada. That's like so embarrassing.
The only guy I know is the Toronto guy, the fat guy that was doing heroin or whatever the hell. And that's the only guy. I don't even know his name. And he's in the news.
That's it. And I mean, I don't get Canada because they got the Queen of England on their money. So I don't even know why you got that connection going. Then I just got some groceries and they got French writing on them. So like, who do you even know who you are? Who are you people?
Oh, God. Is that big guy still work in the Edmonton?
Dino. Yeah.
Dino. Yeah. Did he pick you up at the airport?
Yes, he did.
Yeah. I remember that guy.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, could you do me a solid? Are you in front of the computer?
Yeah. What's up?
Can we just do a top? Are there any natural sights of Canada? I mean, not the cities. We got these great national parks. That's what they have. Forget it. I know what they have.
Okay.
Even then, I don't even want to do a bit about Canada. That's how disinterested I am.
Okay, I just pulled it up. Top 10 things to do in Canada.
Number one would be move to America. Dude, I told you, man, 80% of the entire Canadian population lives within 50 miles of the U.S. border. Did you know that?
No.
80% of all Canadians live within less than an hour drive to America. Dude, they're like hovering over the velvet ropes. They're dying to get in. But literally, like, get off the ropes.
You can't name one thing in Canada that's a huge sightseeing destination.
Niagara Falls.
Okay, you got it. Niagara Falls. After that, it dips off real quick. It goes... Stanley Park, never heard of it. It's in Vancouver. I was just there. Old Quebec.
Okay, I've never been. I wanted to. I hear that's real nice.
Seawall in Vancouver. Ooh. Butch Chart Gardens. Ugh. Notre Dame Basilica in Montreal. I mean, listen, I don't got nothing wrong with Canada. I've been to Canada. I got great fans up there, particularly in the Toronto-Montreal area. But... I mean, looking at the top 10 things here, it's weak.
Hey, listen, number five on their list is something in Montreal. I don't want to put you on the spot, but about 50, 60 shows ago, you opened up basically saying, not a fan of Montreal.
Oh, I did.
Yeah, and then the next show you said it made a big bounce back because you found the good restaurant.
You know why? The food in Montreal saves the city. And I even talked to the locals in Montreal, and they said that, yeah, they haven't remodeled since the 1976 Olympics. They got to get Trump over there to start building some buildings because it's old. It looks like no one's really did paint. Just do something. Spruce it up a little bit.
Clean it up. Come on now. Let's go. So, yeah, there you go, folks. If you're looking to go to Canada, I mean.
I'm sorry to interrupt. We have a news alert right now. Uh-oh. Big news alert I got from my brother-in-law, Rodney.
Wow.
I asked him about the Presley thing. He said yes. His grandfather was his dentist when he was a kid until a few years before he died. Now, here's a little Elvis story. He broke his crown on a microphone once. He flew my dad out to Vegas because my grandfather always had an extra crown? Hold on. Elvis handlers wanted my dad just to give it to them, but he refused it until he saw Elvis. Do you understand that?
It sounds like his dad was the dentist?
No.
Is that what you... Is
the
that
grandfather was the dentist.
Your grandfather was the dentist.
So he broke his crown on a microphone, flew my dad out to Vegas because my grandfather always had an extra, I'm assuming, crown.
Yeah.
I just don't know why the grandfather didn't go out there. So then Elvis handlers wanted my dad just to give it to them, but he refused his dad had to give it to Elvis himself. Why didn't he fly out your grandfather?
Can you imagine flying out your dentist anyway? I can't deal with the copayment. This is crazy.
Yeah, is that covered by insurance?
No.
A flight?
No. And my question is, if I did fly my dentist out, would he still have the balls to charge me for the copay? I flew you out, waived a $10 copay.
Yeah, I don't know what the charge is on that. I mean, is that an extra? I mean, if you got six fillings to do that day, and you get a call from Elvis going, he broke his crown in Vegas, we need you. Did you just wipe it clean?
Oh, are you out of your mind? Everybody's off the slate. Give them all Novocaine pill. Pill them up. I'll be back next Wednesday. And wouldn't they understand? I could be in the worst toothache pain of my life. If I call my dentist and they said, he got a last minute call, Sinatra wanted him to do a crown in Vegas, I'd be like, well, I understand. Tell him to call me when he gets back.
Oh, God.
So we getting any answer here or what?
No, not yet. My brother-in-law's slow on the draw when it comes to text, but we'll see if he responds by the time the end of the show. It's now or never.
Hi, I'm Shuli Agar, comedian and writer and producer on The Howard Stern Show. I'm also a huge fan of The Pete and Sebastian Show. But not just for the comedy, which there's plenty of. I'm a fan of the show for the knowledge I walk away with. Thanks to Pete and Sebastian, I now know what to look for when it comes to spotting someone with Ebola.
You got Ebola?
No, but if I did, I would feel much more comfortable knowing that these two Italian MDs are on the case, getting me all the information I need.
If you have Ebola and you piss on my hand and you hit my cuticles, you hit all the cuticles of my fingernails with your Ebola piss, am I Ebola now?
Dr. Sebastian, your thoughts?
So, if somebody urinates in your nose, you got it, right?
See what I mean? How many doctors have you been to that end a diagnosis with a question, right? And while most doctors try to keep you calm, these two are here to give it to you straight. It's not a good look.
All right. Yeah. Fever greater than 101.5. Headache. Muscle pain. Weakness. I might have all four of those right now.
Come in. You got Ebola.
These Italian MDs will use every resource possible to get you the answers you need.
okay, if you have this, what is, like, what do you die of?
Ah, man, I don't know. Man, you want to Google that shit?
There is something weirdly comforting about doctors who really aren't sure themselves.
Is it airborne? Do you have to urinate in somebody's mouth to get it? What is it?
You're dying, guy.
At the urinal in the bathroom, if you have flip-flops on and you're next to a guy and some of his piss splatters onto your feet,
right.
Do you have it?
Or do you have to have a cut on your foot and, like, literally stand in his puddle of piss? And who's doing that?
Pete and Sebastian, Italian MDs.
We didn't get, like, a real good grasp. We only got you in the beginning of the Mexico trip. Could you give us anything? Any talk with other comedians? What happened?
Well, okay. The Mexico trip, it was long. It was boring, man. It was not, I mean, Brewer had family, so we had a couple fun nights hanging. But, you know, like Alonzo Bowden and Ryan Hamilton went to the pyramids one day, the Mexican pyramids in the jungle.
Yeah.
And they're like, you want to come? And I was like, thanks, but no thanks, you know? So, not much there, but I got a story, bro. Here we go. Travel story. I got a new nickname, too. At least I should have said this story at the beginning of the show, because my new nickname is Balls. Let me explain why. So I got an 8:10. This is a horror. I got an 8:10 flight in the morning out of Cancun, Mexico. The people running Just for Laughs go, we don't like to cut corners. We like to get you there early. I'm the first comedian out. They have a private shuttle van for me to take me at 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm literally through customs waiting to go home by 5:30 in the morning. I got about 2 hours and change to kill before my flight out of Mexico. I don't mind. I'm sitting around fine. Get on the plane. I'm going from Cancun to Philly. When I land in Philadelphia, I have about a half hour layover before I get on a flight to Buffalo. And the layover is tight. I don't want to miss it. I got to run through customs. But I'm so psyched to just get on another plane and go. I land in Philly. I run through customs. I get all the way through. I got my bag. I'm like, dude, I'm totally going to make this plane. No problem. I'm going home. I look at the giant board with all the flights out of Philly. Only one says canceled in red. And, of course, it's mine. So now I go up to the counter. I'm talking to the lady. And she goes, and this is what blows my mind, bro. I'm stuck now. You canceled my flight for a mechanical reason. It's Sunday afternoon at 1 in the afternoon in Philly. And she looks at me and she's punching in. You know when they always punch? They're sitting there.
Hey,
what are you writing? A fucking novel, lady?
Yeah.
I could find out the flight situation on orbits quicker than you're doing right here. Then she looks up and she goes, like, this is not a big deal at all. We have a flight going out tomorrow at 4 p.m. that'll get you in at 8 p.m. She says it like she's offering me a coffee.
Oh, God.
I'm like, lady, you want me to come back to this gate at 4 p.m. tomorrow? I was going to be home in about an hour from now. Well, that's all I have. Well, that's not working, man. I mean, and I don't know if this helped or not, but I was so exasperated. I'm like, come on, man. I haven't seen my kid in 8 days. I just want to go. Whatever. You don't care. Nobody cares. I'm just saying, lady, I want to go home. And I think she kind of heard the kid thing there.
Yeah.
And she does some more punching. She comes back and she's like, well, okay, I can get you on the 9:25 flight. There's one more at 9:25 tonight that goes into Buffalo. I can get you on that. And in my head, I just want to be like, so why weren't you doing that to begin with?
Yeah.
Why did I have to cry before you put me on that? It's amazing. So, nevertheless, now I got to sit in the airport for 8 hours or 9 hours. But whatever, at least I'm going home. Now, before that, there's two flights going from Philly to Buffalo that didn't get canceled. Same airline. And you can go and do standby. Now, I've never done standby before, really. Mm. Dude, that is so humiliating. Have you ever done that?
Have I ever done that? I used to work for United Airlines. That's all I used to fly was standby.
Oh, you sit there with your little bag like a homeless person hoping someone gives you some bread. Just somebody talk, and you're watching people Yep, and you're looking at the crowd going, oh, this is sold out. There's no room on this. Look at all these people.
Yeah.
And then more people coming like, oh, here we go, stragglers. So at one point then everyone's on the plane, and they don't look at you or acknowledge you at all when you're doing standby. You mean nothing to them.
Yeah.
And then finally the lady gets on. She goes, is Mr. Peter Corielli here? I'm so excited. I go, yeah. And she goes, is a Kathy da-da-da? And that lady goes, yeah. And she goes, okay, we're totally sold, so there's nothing for you two. Thanks. And you're like, so then you take your bag and you go to the next gate and you do this, you know. So it's embarrassing. At least I had my flight out. So in the meantime, I call United and I say, you know, this is bullshit, blah, blah, blah. So they give me $400 credit. And I'm also going home that night at 9 o'clock. Now cut to, it's nighttime, finally getting ready to board my flight. And I'm in group 4 to board. Now, on my original flight, I was in group 1. So there's a woman who's been there all day. She's been not nice to anybody who's all, you know, trying to get out of there. She hasn't been a nice person. I've seen her have a few confrontations. She was really nasty to me, blowing me off when I needed help when I was first there. And she's seen me sitting there all day. I go up to her and I go, hey, listen, on my original flight, I was in group 1. Now you canceled it and I'm in group 4. Can I just go on? And she goes, you can get on when your group is called. That's when you can get on, sir.
Oh,
it's like,
God.
She's not even acknowledging. I want to be like, but you saw me sitting here all this. It's crazy. So, and then she goes, and by the time we get to your group, there probably won't be room for bags, so we will have to check that all the way to the gate. Now, in Buffalo, bro, they take a half hour to get your bag off the carousel. By the time you get your bag off the Buffalo Airport carousel, all the cabs are gone because there's only 5 of them. So now you got to stand there and wait till they call a cab for you. It could set you back an hour waiting for your bag. So I go, well, and she goes, you'll have to check that bag, sir. And I was like, well, I'll put it under my seat. It won't fit under your seat, sir. You'll have to check it by the time they get to your group. Sure enough, they get up to my group. And before they announce my group, they go, we're checking all bags from here on in. So I walk up, and she grabs my bag, and I could tell she's happy to do this, and she slings that little thing over at the scanner, the ticket, and she wants me to drop it off at the end of the tunnel. So then when I get on the, you know, and then like I said, it'll be at the baggage. And I know she's not flying with us. So she hands me the bag back with the thing on it. As soon as I round the bend from her, I rip the baggage tag right off. I put it in my pocket and I carry the bag right on and I stuff it right under my seat and cover it with a coat. Like, F, huh? I don't give a shit.
Wow.
So, no sooner do I do that, there's a guy behind me in a Carhartt jacket and a John Deere hat. All he says as he walks by, he just goes, balls.
Oh, man. That's unheard of. I never even heard of that move. Skipping the bag layoff.
She thinks I checked it because she thought, I skipped that. And then I fly back out 2 days later, and I get stuck in Chicago. My flight gets canceled, and I have to do a night overnight in Chicago Airport. Oh,
I've never heard of this, man. I've never heard of someone missing, canceling, staying overnight more than you. It's amazing.
It's killing me, dude. High winds out of Chicago. All flights were canceled, delayed. It took me 24 hours from the minute I left my home. It took me 24 hours to get here.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I got a recommendation here.
What do you got?
First of all, Lana and I decided to have like a small kind of holiday party. I wouldn't even call it a holiday party, but we're not going to see our friends or anybody really in the Los Angeles area for Thanksgiving or Christmas because we're going to be out of town. So we decided to have some people over. There is a meat guy. I found a meat guy in Los Angeles. By meat guy, I mean a guy who's got T-bone, New York strip, filet, that type of guy. A butcher, if you will.
Yeah.
And for those people in the Los Angeles area, I just heard about this guy. I've been living there for 18 years. This guy's name is Harvey's Gus Meat Company. Harvey's Gus is his name, meat company. Been in business over there. Guy's 81 years old. Been in business in Los Angeles for, you know, since, I think it was 19... Well, actually, no, longer than that. Wolfgang Puck actually got this guy to cater one of his parties in 1976. So this guy's 81. He's been around for years. and we order meat from this guy, you got to put the order in the day before, and he's open 5 a.m. to 12. He's got, like, no hours.
Yeah.
You put it in before. He's been, his father started the company in 1939. So he's been around forever. And I got to tell you, the meat was unbelievable. We had a feast with the meat. Ribeye, porterhouse, filet. Got the best filet I've ever had. So we put out this spread for the people. And Lana and I were talking. This really came from me, though. We're in an apartment, and we're still having parties. When are we going to get an invite? No one has us over, man. I'm pissed off.
But are you into that, man? I mean, are you going to go?
Somebody else throw a party with me.
I think the last thing I remember you going to was a wedding, and you ended up railing it for the first 40 minutes of the show, and then we had to take it out of the show anyway. So you don't do well when other people are throwing the shindig. It's almost like you'd rather have it yourself. So
I you're right. Listen, it's a tough call. Having it because I know how we're gonna do it is gonna be, you know, really good.
Yeah, but, I mean, someone else does it.
Come on, man, give someone else. I just make an effort. No. Just call us and go, we're going to have people over for like a wine and cheese, something. I don't know why we're always having it.
I wish I lived closer to you, bro, because this holiday season, I'm making your eggnog.
Oh, did you see the recipe I got up on the page?
Well, no, Jackie said, because I'm home for the holidays, I can't wait. I mean, home, and we always have Christmas. So she said, you want to make Sebastian's eggnog? And I was like, definitely. And she's like, all right, I'll grab it off of the Facebook page. I know it's up there.
Oh, so, yeah, you got to make it.
So, and it takes like 2 days, right? I know, yeah. I got to let some stuff sit and all this stuff. Yeah, yeah. So I wish I was around. I'd have you over to try your own eggnog, man. Oh,
see, that's what I'm talking about. Try my own eggnog. That would be great. I mean, if I got a call tomorrow, come on over. We're making your eggnog. I'm there. God.
Wow. Well, it sounds like you had a nice. Where are you going for Thanksgiving, by the way?
Oh, this is going to be a different Thanksgiving altogether. For the last 6 years, we've spent Thanksgiving at Lana's house or Lana's parents' house. We're here until Wednesday, and Wednesday we leave. And Thanksgiving this year is going to be celebrated at my father's house, the house I grew up in. And this is the first Thanksgiving I'm going to spend with my father in God knows how long. And it's going to be my father, his girlfriend, and her family. Hey!
This is new. Are you going to stay in the house or in a hotel?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wednesday and Thursday, Lana and I are going to be sleeping in my old bedroom that I grew up in.
Oh my God! Is it still like your room, or is it totally different?
No. They remodeled it, so it's definitely it doesn't look anything like how it looked when we were kids. But we have stayed in this room before, and I don't know if I've mentioned this on the cast, but there is a doll in the room that my grandmother brought over from Sicily. And the doll is the creepiest doll you'll ever want to see. I think it's got like real hair on its head. And the eyes are really, it almost looks like Chucky.
Wow, dude, I'm thinking Antique Roadshow, forget the tooth. Forget the tooth. Real hair on a doll brought over from Sicily?
Yeah, what do you think that goes for on Antique Roadshow?
Oh man, I think easily 10 grand, easily. You should tell your father. I mean, does he know that? He should really look into that.
If he doesn't care, has he got sentimental value with it?
Yeah, it's one of those things where I don't think this thing's going to be in the family for a while. But Lana and I were in bed, and it was dark, and she said to me, you have to put that doll in the closet. I could feel it staring at me.
Yeah, dolls are creepy, man.
This one's creepy. I got to take a photo of it. It's weird, man. It's a weird doll.
Yeah, and that's like a stuffed animal's easy. It's cute, but those dolls with eyes, man.
Yeah, like real eyes with lashes.
Yeah.
It ain't good.
Man, I'm so jealous you get to go to your own childhood bedroom. Like, let me ask you a question. If we brought this up, let me know. But I was playing Long Island a couple weeks ago, and I had a rental car. And I so bad wanted to go to my childhood home, which we haven't lived in for years. We sold it years ago. How whacked would it be to go up and politely knock on the front door and just say, I'm so sorry to bother you, but I grew up in this home, and my name's da-da-da-da. It had nothing to do with comedy. I'm not trying to see if they know me. Just as a human being, just go, I mean, is it at all possible if I could just have a quick look around and it would just bring back such memories? Or would the person be like, dude, that party's over, guy?
Well, I did mention this on the cast before, that my father and I, when we went to Italy, and we went to his hometown in Sicily.
Yeah.
He did that. He knocked on the door. This is old world Sicily, though. So he knocked on the door, and an Italian said, I used to live here. Do you mind if my son and I walk around? And they let us up, and we walked around. Our family was eating dinner, and we were walking around their house.
Holy, I don't think you mentioned that.
No, though. Yeah, no. We went up. It was a little strange because the guy, it was one of those things where they weren't very welcoming to begin with. They weren't like, oh yeah, come on up. It was, what? And then she, hold on. And you know she asked the husband.
Yeah.
And then the husband, I guess, probably said yes, but really didn't want to say yes.
Who would?
We walked in. This is on the third floor. We walked in, and he's sitting at the table, hovering over like a bowl of pasta with a Dago tea on, and just hair coming out of the Dago tea. Looks like he just got done with like a 15-hour shift at a mill. And then he's got two of his kids flanking him.
Yeah.
And he's looking at us, and he gives us a look like, make this quick, or you might not get out of here alive. So we kind of walked around. My dad's like, this is where the thing was. This is where I grew up. This is my old bedroom. And then, boom, we were out. So, you know what? In America, it's going to be a harder sell because nowadays it's like, what do you want? What do you want? Why are you even on my property?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It'd be a good... Try it.
We'd be like... In America, we'd be like, didn't you take photos when you left? Like right now, your house is a perfect example. When you finally move back in, someone knocks on the door going, I used to live here. Can I see the house? You'd be like, guy, we knocked that whole fucking thing down. This is entirely new. You won't recognize anything. Trust me.
Oh,
I can't believe you and your dad did that. That's crazy, man.
Yeah, man. We rang the bell, and they let us up. And I saw where his room was when... He was a kid that he shared with his brother, and I saw the place my father grew up on, and it was a box, man. It was small. I couldn't believe it. I mean, the kitchen was so... I was like, wow, this is where you grew up. I was really wild to see, and I'm thankful that that family let us in because that's like ingrained in the back of my head of where my father came from. And I don't know, man. I don't know if they will let you in or not. I highly doubt it.
Yeah, I doubt it too, man, because all this stuff is in there, you know?
Yeah.
I would want to be like, listen, do you still got that plumbing problem we used to have to put the toilet paper in the garbage can? I wonder.
When did they sell the house?
Oh, I was in college, so I lived there all the way through, you know? So this is, I don't know, maybe the 92 maybe?
It's funny because my buddy, whose mother lives in New York, his mother approached her son, my friend, and said, listen, when I die, My request is you don't sell the house. You keep it in the family. How do you feel about that?
We talked about that. I know you wish you want to do that because your dad had that farm growing up, and that would be so
cool.
Yeah,
no, I'm talking about the house now. Like if your parents came to you and said, listen, we've been living here in this home for whatever, 18 years now, and or longer than that.
Right.
And when we pass away, we'd like you to keep it in the family. Would you honor that?
I would. Well, first I'd say, well, what if nobody wants it? Then do you mind if we sell it? And if they said, well, if that's what you're going to do, then we're going to donate it to the da-da-da. I'll be like, okay, we'll keep it in the family. And then when they die, I'd sell it. I'm being totally honest.
Oh, shit. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, if your parents give you a request, say, hey, listen, when I pass away, that's all I ask is you don't do X, Y, and Z. If you don't agree with that and they pass away, you have no problem going against your parents' wishes?
Yeah, I'm not a big deathbed guy. You know? I mean, you're dead. It's over. That's it. You're done. You're done. If we had to keep promises to everybody when they die that we said we'd keep, oh, forget it, man. You listen. You tell them what they want to hear. You pat their forehead, a little kiss on the cheek, and I'll see you on the other side, guy.
Oh, God.
Promise me you'll never do that. Yeah, no, I'll never do that. I'll never do that, Mom.
Yeah, okay, so you're not like... You're not like, hey, I know you're not good with your brother. If you could do just make up with your brother. That's all I ask. And they pass away. You take your two fingers, you close their eyelids, and that's it. You don't make up with the brother.
That's it. They're like, make up with your brother. We will. My mom's eyes closed. I look over at my brother. My loyal core, yours. You get half, I get half. See you later, asshole. Boom, done. Yeah, no, I mean, come on. But I mean, I don't have a problem with my brother, so that's not a problem.
But I'm just
would you do that to somebody though? Put them in that position right before you die? Like, what am I gonna do? Look up at Sadie right before I die and just be like, you know, don't marry a woman. I can't control who I'm in love with. Say that to me. Say you'll never marry another lady. Now I gotta edit. I didn't have to edit. Fuck.
Oh, that's all right. Leave it in.
All right.
By the way, this is a good time to plug some shows here. I will be in Arizona in December. I believe it's the 4th through the 8th at the Stand Up Live Comedy Club. So I'll be there if you want to like do a cast or if you want to do a dinner. December 3rd. December 3rd through the 6th, I'm in Arizona. So you come in what, the 1st?
No, I think I come in the 2nd. Hold on, let me see here.
It's a Wednesday, huh? You coming in on a Wednesday?
No, I'm coming in. I come in Tuesday night, so.
Okay. Yeah, we're
so in. I can
we're
hang good. Out, late Tuesday night, but I can hang out Wednesday night, can you?
So do a Wednesday. We'll do a Wednesday hang.
Nice.
Do you got any shows coming up here?
I got, what do I want to plug? In Baltimore, Magoobies, December 11th and 12th. Come out to Baltimore, one of my favorite rooms. I really like those guys. Atlanta in the. New Year's Eve, the Atlanta Punchline. But I'm coming out to L.A. I don't know where they're going to air, but I'm coming out because I'm doing Bill Burr's podcast. And then the next day, I'm doing Mark Maron's podcast.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. That'll be fun. And then hopefully we get together and do us. So that'll be fun. Good hanging again, as always. Listen, we need Sleeping with Sebastians, bro. We need more. We didn't even acknowledge. I want to do a little... I'm doing it ahead of time. I don't know when Lou's playing or if he played yet. That bit by Shuley. Oh God. Come on. What a guy. I mean, what a bit.
There's a Shuley bit you're going to hear. I don't know if you've already heard it.
Let's say now. We'll play it now. We'll close with it.
Yeah. Play it now. But before we do the Shuley bit, I do have to announce a couple more dates.
Yeah,
I just announced my 2016 tour. And it's the first half of the tour. So if you don't see your cities on this slate, don't be alarmed. It might be on the second half. But I just want to rattle off some cities. And the dates are all up on SebastianLive.com. Boston, Fort Lauderdale, Atlanta, Albany, Atlantic City, San Francisco, Detroit, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, Minneapolis, Milwaukee, Vegas, Buffalo, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, New York. And I'm doing my special at the Beacon Theater in New York, May 6th and 7th. 7th is the taping. 6th is a couple of shows. Can't even get tickets for that. Those are all sold out. May 1st, I've added another show. That's sold out. I'm doing another show. I said, fuck it. Let me just set up shop in New York. May 1st, tickets on sale Tuesday. It's a 5 p.m. show. I'm going matinee. All ages welcome. Beacon Theater. It's a Sunday. Please come out and enjoy the show. So that's the tour schedule for now. Let's get to the Shuley thing.
Hold on. I got to ask one question. So do you name your tours?
This is the Aren't You Embarrassed Tour. Now, people are asking, is it the same material as the Aren't You Embarrassed special? No, it's just the name of the tour, and it will be called something else the second half of the year. But I didn't want to name it a new name because the new name is going to be the name of my special, and I didn't want that out there. So I just stuck with the Aren't You Embarrassed Tour. Aren't You Embarrassed for me is just like a brand, so it's not necessarily the material. So
yeah, I got, you know, it's like last night the shows were packed, and it's like I could tell there's more and more people coming. And when you start to have this body of work now, it's like I definitely have new stuff I want to say, but do you ever just like, I let it rip. If I do an old one because I'm feeling it, I go with the old one.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I mean, you definitely have what you want to say, and then you just, other stuff, you just kind of go for it, right?
Yeah, this whole notion of you do a special and then what, you retire the material, you're not never going to do it again? I don't really buy it. Do whatever you feel like doing. If you love the bit, do it. And if it works and people love it,
That's how I like to do it. That's how I like to do it, yeah. So, all right, yeah, and Shuley, go ahead. Bring this
the
up.
The Shuley bit that I got on email, it's like a 2.5 minute clip you're going to hear here. And it's Pete and Sebastian as MDs. I don't even remember saying some of that stuff that he pulled. Do you?
No, I don't, man. It was fun to hear it. I actually wanted to tell you too. The night my special premiered, I didn't have showtime. I had no one to hang out with. I'm in Mexico, and you know what I did? Because it was a weird feeling. I'm like wondering if people are watching it, what they're thinking. I went back and listened to a couple of old casts with a six-pack of beer. Whew. And first of all, we used to be better, I have to tell you.
When are you talking?
I'm talking, it was an episode where I was bringing up Santa Claus at the mall and how I could see the dark hair on his neck. and then you go, Santa Claus has got to be 65 or older just to fill out the application, right? I mean, and I'm like, oh, we were good. I'm only kidding. We are still. I'm still having a good time. But I'm just saying, man, the body of work we're leaving behind, baby.
Oh, yeah. We're coming up on 200 here. Are we going to do anything that's... Do we have to do anything special? I mean, people are wondering, 200, you're going to have a special guest. What are you going to do special? Do we have to?
No.
Isn't every week special?
That's what I'm thinking. The only thing we might do starting on 200 is charge $5 a show. Never, man. It'll always be free. And, I don't know, man. That's not what we do. Every time we're going to maybe have a guest or something, the other one hems or haws. We just, this is what we do. This is what we do.
This is the show.
Dude, by the way, Lou, can we end the show after Shuley with a little of that? Dude, I'm into country now. Have you heard that song by Chris Stapleton? You're as smooth as Tennessee whiskey.
No.
Oh, bro, no. After the show, YouTube, Justin Timberlake, oh my God, I can't believe I just said that, and Chris Stapleton, Smooth Tennessee Whiskey, it's called. They played it together live at the Country Music Awards. Whoa, this is live music. Michael Jackson couldn't moonwalk and follow this shit, man.
Oh, I'm going to have to check it out. I don't even want to tell you what I'm into right now.
Well, we can get into it next show unless you want to bring it up now because I'm a country guy. I'm going country lately, so I got my own embarrassments.
I picked up the new Bieber album.
Oh, man, this show is officially over. It's been great hanging, dude.
We'll leave it at that. Enjoy your Thanksgiving, and we will see you next week.
Later, man.
Bye.
The show has ended.
Balls.